group of Upanishads is called the Yoga Upanishad. These are latter Upanishads. The chakras are described in the number of the Upanishads of this group. For example, a listing of the names and locations is given in the Yoga Kundalini Upanishad, chapter 3. There are six chakras. Muladhara is in the anus. Svadhisthana is near the genital organ. Manipura is in the navel. Anahata is in the heart. Vishuddha is at the root of the neck. And Ajna is in the head, between the two eyebrows. Having known these six mandalas, spheres, one should enter the Sukha Mandala, pineal gland, drawing up the Vayu, and should send it, Vayu, upwards. Vayu means prana, and in this sense means the Kundalini, because that's the name of the Upanishad. So that's giving the location. It's showing these are where the chakras are. The Yoga Chudamani Upanishad gives the number of petals. Their first base, chakra with four petals, and the center of his own self. Svadhisthana with six petals, navel chakra, there is 10. A heart, Hridaya, 12. Then the center of purification, Vishuddha, 16. And in the space between the eyebrows, must be a Brahmadya chakra, two petals. The thousand petal lotus, Sahasrara, is held on the frontal or spaces between the skull bones, Brahmaranda, where the trail opens sublime. So that means you're supposed to go through that. Trail opens sublime. The relationship of the chakras to the elements and deities is given in Yogashika Upanishad, chapter 5. The earth region is quadrangular, and the presiding dia is Brahma, long A. The water region is half-moon-shaped, and its presiding deity is Vishnu. The fire region is triangular, and its presiding deity is Rudra. The region of air is hexagonal, and its presiding deity is Ishwara, or Sangarsha. The region of void, Akasha, is circular, and its presiding deity is Sarashiva, or Narayana. In the space between the eyebrows is the Manas Mandala in the Nada form. Here is the Shambhava Sthana. All these chakras in the body are in the form of power. So that's giving us that kind of information on the elements. Additional information on the chakras is found in the Shakta Tantras. These scriptures describe how 50 letters of the Sanskrit alphabet are assigned to the 50 petals of the six chakras. The order is to start with the Vishuddha going downward, and after Muladhara is the Ajna. So we can see on the next page, it's interesting to relate the whole Sanskrit alphabet to these chakras. We won't be practicing that, but it's just there for reference. Shakta Tantras also give the Bija mantras for the Muladhara through the Ajna chakras. So Bija means seed. And in this case, when it talks about mantras, it's these three or four syllable versions of mantras, very short, terse versions. So lam, vam, ram, yam, ham, Aum are the Bija mantras for the six chakras. Adharam, the Tamil word for chakra, is Adharam. You'll find that in some of the Nachintanai. And of course, it's right in the Muladhara, Adhara. It's in that one. Muladhara means the root. Mula is root, or first Adhara chakra. So first chakra. Muladhara. So the songs, Yogaswami and others use Adharam. That's the definition from the Tamil lexicon. Many books present information on the chakras. However, our presentation is based on Gurudeva's writings on the chakras, and contains many unique insights and emphases not found elsewhere. Two, for example, are his clear explanations of each of the seven lower chakras, and his emphasis on stabilizing consciousness in the Muladhara chakra. As I jokingly said before, it's not an exciting topic for a weekend seminar, how to stabilize your consciousness in the Muladhara chakra, how to be above anger and fear. We have very poor attendance, right? We want the Kundalini to rise, and then we have better attendance. So it's a more exciting topic, the higher chakras, but we have to start with the basics. It's similar to any systematic study in school. Mathematics, for example, you learn the numbers, you learn to add and subtract. You have to start with the basics, and then you go to more advanced based on that, and more advanced mathematics, but you go through it in a systematic way. You have to start with the basics. So in this case, the basics are stabilizing consciousness in the Muladhara chakra, which means we're not experiencing a lot of fear, which is down one chakra, or we're not experiencing severe anger issues, which is down two chakras. Doesn't mean we are never fearful or we are never a bit angry. It means it's not a dominant experience. You know, if we get in there, we move out of it quickly. That should be the goal of a meditator. We're not trying to be perfect and never experience anger. We're trying to minimize it. And if we get there, move out of it as quickly as possible. So this next paragraph we've already looked at. In any one lifetime, one may predominantly be aware in two or three centers, thus setting the pattern for the way one thinks and lives. One develops a comprehension of these seven regions in a natural sequence, the perfection of one leading logically to the next. Thus, though we may not psychically be seeing spinning forces within ourselves, we nevertheless mature through them. Okay, moving on, the pranic sheath. This is cognizant ability, aphorism 53. Upon passing into a state of sleep, the body's five positive currents are systematically depolarized. So polarized and depolarized, we need to understand that. Polarized means they're apart, they're polarized. Like you put two ends of a magnet that repel toward each other, they'll move apart. So polarized means they're naturally apart. They're doing separate work, they're polarized. And then to depolarize means they all come together. Upon passing into a state of sleep, the body's five positive currents are systematically depolarized. We'll look at systematically in a minute. This allows the ego to pass from the physical plane into the sub-superconscious regions. When the body is fully recuperated, the currents are again polarized, thus pulling the ego back into the physical body, hence the conscious plane. Conscious plane, when in a physical body, is always home-based. The five currents hold individual awareness, which in this aphorism is referred to as the ego, in the conscious plane or conscious mind. Therefore, the individual awareness can soar into the sub-superconscious regions and entertain great input, knowledge, direction for one's future, understanding of the karmas that have been gone through, as well as creativity that can later be manifested on the conscious plane. But, as the aphorism says, once the body is fully recuperated from a state of sleep, individual awareness is now again aware of the conscious plane, which is the external world. All of the sub-superconscious input from the various regions is not forgotten, but is not remembered. and will slowly infiltrate from the sub-superconscious to the subconscious to the conscious mind and manifest in the conscious plane or conscious mind intelligence at a much later time. And if you understood that, you get an A plus. Whoa, what was Gurudeva saying there? Well, he's saying that if we go deep enough in sleep, we end up in what he calls interplane schools, or we end up learning from others. We can be learning Hinduism, we can be learning religion, we can be learning yoga, we could be learning any subject, really, but we're learning. And we're using a part of the mind that is more subtle than the conscious mind or external mind. Therefore, when we wake up, most people won't be able to remember, because all of a sudden they're using a grosser part of the mind. They won't be able to remember the subtle part of the mind. Some people could. Similar to a puja, you attend a powerful puja, you have a sense you got blessed, but you may have received knowledge too. And that knowledge you're not aware of. So how do you become aware of the knowledge? Well, that's what Gurudeva is saying. Will slowly infiltrate from the sub-superconscious to the subconscious to the conscious mind and manifest in the conscious plane or conscious mind intelligence at a much later time. So it's coming from the inside out. It's coming from the sub-superconscious into the subconscious into the conscious mind. And you can tell because your perspective on something is a little different, for example. You're not looking at things exactly as you were previously. You have an insight or an understanding of something that you didn't have before. You're reacting differently. Something isn't upsetting you that usually does. You're looking at it more with a smile. Say, oh, here we go again. You know, see how we handle it this time. So that's the idea. It's a very profound point, deserving of study. The aphorism states that the body's five positive currents are systematically depolarized. This is what I said was coming up. This implies that they can be depolarized in an unsystematic way. To have the systematically depolarized pranayama, hatha yoga, and japa should precede the state of sleep. It also implies that the state of sleep is a state of deep meditation for the unfolded person. This does not happen for everyone. This happens for the one who prepares himself to go into that kind of deep sleep, who is in a state in which the five currents can be systematically depolarized. The five currents are the five winds of the body, which is what, you know, we've been talking about, prana, apana, vyana. So let's comment on that. So it's saying, if you just go lie down and go to sleep, and you're not particularly internalized, the five currents can depolarize unsystematically, which means you don't go in. You're asleep, but you can have shallow dreams, and you're not that deep in consciousness. So that's a normal state. And sometimes even if you do go through the whole process, if you're traveling, you're in a strange place, and who knows what was happening there before. So you can be disturbed by the environment. When you're in an unfamiliar environment, not in your own home where everything is, you know, as it should be, you're traveling, you can end up unsystematically depolarized, which means shallow sleep. But if you're able to systematically depolarize the five currents, you're going in and it's really meditation. You're not sleeping, you're meditating. So someone who's good at that, there's no difference between sitting in meditation and sleeping. They're ending up in the same place. So they would tend to remember more because the conscious mind is present in a stronger way when they're awake and meditating than when they're asleep and meditating. They'd have more trouble recollecting what happened. Depolarized means that they all rest. It's like nikashum. So nikashum is the shum word. Nikashum is the shum word. When you are doing nikashum, you are withdrawing all the five winds into simshum bisi, the center of your being. Depolarizing means bringing together that which is naturally apart. So I explained that. Shum language, this is called nikashum. The energy of these five functions would be drawn into the shushumna current and enliven kundalini activity somewhat. Notice the somewhat. Means a little bit. Just enough for individual awareness to flow into sub-superconscious inner worlds of creative intelligence, absorbing all the knowledge which they at that time could contain. This then is held as a deposit along with other intelligence experience within the sub-superconscious mind, slowly infiltrating through the subconscious to the conscious mind. Any questions? A question. Oh, brave soul, yes.
Is yoga nidra similar in bringing the five together?
Is which?
Yoga nidra.
Yes. I'm not familiar with the term.
Okay.
Any other questions? Yes. The five winds? Remember the five winds? We talked about it. Om Puranaya Swaha, Om Apanaya Swaha, Om Vyanaya, Udanaya, Samanaya. That's how I remember them, because it's in the chant. It's in the food blessing chant. I mean, the Om Puranaya Swaha, Om Apanaya Swaha. You're offering, you're taking the energy that's in food and energizing the five different winds of the deity. That's what that means, giving prana to the deity in different wind. So we'll look at those again. There's an explanation of them coming up, the five winds. So we've looked at it before. Yes?
Would children naturally go into
this space? Well, yes, children can go into this space. In fact, they might go into it more deeply, but they don't have the intellectual structure to relate it to necessarily. They might blurt something out. When they wake up, blurt something out that sounds profound. So that sounds pretty profound, but the intellectual structure of how to try and retain the knowledge that's there or bring forth that knowledge isn't in children. Yes?
What about babies, like up to age 2 or so? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's open?
Yes, well, babies up to a certain age, aren't really functioning in the normal sense. They have to come out.
But can they do that unconsciously?
Well, I'm not sure, on infants, I haven't really thought much about small children, but, as I say, young children, 6 is looked at as a peak of purity. Children up to age 6 don't really have a strong instinctive mind. They're kind of divine-like in their own way, but they also don't have a lot of intellect, so they're kind of like an untrained divinity, untrained purity. So therefore, they can have certain experiences. They can see certain things in the temple. And we've had our young children come in around that age, and they see all kinds of devas and activity and explain it to their parents, and the parents say, oh, that's nice. Yes?
So the impression to be formed from the sub-superconscious to the subconscious.
Yes.
Does everything become an impression? Or
here's the mic. Yes. Yes, it all is impressed. Yeah, it's just a process. It's indiscriminate. What happens, it's similar to the conscious mind. What happened yesterday, everything that happened while our eyes were open, our ears were open, got impressed. You know, not part of it didn't get impressed, and part of it not get impressed. The whole thing got impressed in our memory, in our subconscious, from the outside in. So this is getting impressed from the inside out. But it's such a subtle vibration, we have to sense it through a feeling nature.
And is there a timeline for this, becoming a subconscious impression?
No, it happens immediately. It happens. So the subsuperconscious is impressing the subconscious on an immediate basis, just as the conscious mind impressions are impressing the subconscious on an immediate basis. So it's just, we've shifted our awareness. We're, instead of being in the conscious plane, we're in the inner world, and the same process of impressing on our subconscious is taking place. But it's more subtle. Yes.
In respect to the sleep, mm-hmm. the deep sleep state is where we are supposed to lose our individual identity and the ego disappears.
Yes.
And we are one with the super self or God.
Yes.
But not recognize that when we wake up. At what level does the transmission of the information take place? Is it in the REM sleep, the dreaming state, or in the deep sleep that we absorb?
No, this is deep sleep.
In the deep sleep.
Because REM, if REM is a more shallow experience.
Is there any way of bringing back what is in the subconscious quickly, rather than saying it comes in later?
Yes, become a great yogi.
Thank you.
That is quick. Yes.
This is kind of a morbid question, but upon transition or death, mm-hmm. The goal is to have the fontanelles open, correct? Brahmarandra?
Yeah, well, yes, yes. If someone is in a really high state, they could go through that.
So
yes.
What happens if somebody's comatose?
Yes, well, that's the problem. That's why it's to be avoided. If they're actually, I don't know enough about that. If they're actually not conscious at all, then they're not going to be able to leave through the highest chakra. If they're actually not conscious at all, therefore, you want consciousness. Of course, you don't want pain. You're trying to balance consciousness and pain. But the Hindu point of view is, you want to be conscious, you want to be in a religious mood, you want to be uplifted, Gurudeva's ideal is you're at home, you're with family, they've created a religious vibration in your room, everyone knows you're going to pass, there's no efforts to prolong your life, you're just trying to leave in a high state of mind, so you want awareness to be there in the Hindu approach. It requires a conscious effort to go in as far as you can, so you have to be conscious.
So do you basically, when you're in deep meditation during sleep, you're basically exiting your
body? Well, deep meditation,
No, when I say you, meaning literally you.
Well, different individuals experience different things in meditation. That's the point, and you're learning some of that from Sarvananda, but meditation comes in many shapes and forms. It's a bit like saying, okay, we'll make a painting. Well, if all of us here were making a painting, it would come out different. If all of us go into meditation in an unstructured way, we'd be meditating in a different way. The shun meditation is to try and get us to do it all exactly the same, make the same painting. Do the same thing. That's why it's structured with the commands and all. Okay, well, let's keep going. There were certainly questions there. Okay, this is, let's take a look here. Okay, this is a new practice. Three practices, Liam Kasi, Am Kasi, and Kasi, which are shum words. everybody on that three practices page? Let's see how we're doing on time. Okay, we took more time on that than I thought. On the in-breath, send energy from the third chakra to the first chakra. Then on the out-breath, send energy up to the fourth chakra. This cycle is repeated 3, 4, 5, or 6 times. So we won't try and do the second part. Jingui. So sit up straight, close your eyes. So the third chakra is the solar plexus. So you breathe in, send the energy from the third chakra down to the first. And on the out breath, send it up to the four. So in goes down to the first, and then out breath from the first up to the fourth. In breath, down from the third to the first. Out breath, up to the fourth. In, down from the third to the first. Out breath, up from the first to the fourth. Okay, then if you just go ahead a page, then we'll come back. Just go ahead a page. See, there's 36 parts of the body. See them listed there? So we take the first one. First, left foot, mra. So mra is the shum word. We're not going to deal with that. That's just there for reference. But there's 36 parts of the body. And we're going to send energy to them. So we go back a page and we'll read the instructions. Send energy from the third chakra, Bhivumbika, to the left foot on the out-breath. On the in-breath, bring the same energy back to the third chakra. So that's the idea. On the out-breath, we're sending it down, and then we're bringing it back. So that's a long way, you know, the foot, to bring it back, you know, to follow it all the way back. Okay, so let's try it. I'll guide us through it. Okay, out breath, energy goes to the left foot. In breath comes back to the third chakra. Out breath goes down to the right foot. In breath, you bring the energy back. Out breath down to the left calf. In breath up to the solar plexus. Out breath down to the right calf. In breath, bring the energy back to the solar plexus. Out breath, send energy to the left knee. In breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out breath, send energy to the right knee. In breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out breath, send energy to the left thigh. In breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out breath, send energy to the right thigh. In, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out breath, send energy to the left rump. In breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out breath, send energy to the right rump. In breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out breath, send energy to the left abdomen. In breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. out-breath, send energy to the right abdomen. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left kidney. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right kidney. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the spleen. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the liver. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left ribs. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right ribs. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left lung. In-breath, send energy back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right lung. In-breath, send it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left collarbone. In-breath, send it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right collarbone. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left shoulder. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right shoulder. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left upper arm. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right upper arm. In-breath, send it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left forearm. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right forearm. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left hand. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right hand. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left thyroid. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right thyroid. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left ear. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right ear. In-breath, bring it back through the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the left eye. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Out-breath, send energy to the right eye. In-breath, bring it back to the solar plexus. Very good. Any questions on that? Did you do okay? Didn't get lost? So the purpose of that, we're starting to direct prana, and it's also an excellent concentration exercises to go through that yourself and not lose track of where you are, not lose your count. We're going to skip the next one because we're running a little late here, and we'll do that one tomorrow, the Kasi one. Okay, part three, the ultimate goal. This is our Dancing with Shiva, where we ask the question before we give the answer. What is the ultimate goal of earthly life? Without reading the text, what do you think is the answer to this question? It's an easy one. Self-realization, yes. Anything else? attaining moksha, okay, self-realization, attaining moksha. Merging with Shiva, yes. Okay, those are all correct answers. The in Gurudeva's teachings, there's three distinct goals. Self-realization or God-realization is first, as was mentioned, and that eventually leads to moksha or liberation from rebirth on earth, which is second, and then we're in the inner worlds, and eventually we merge with Shiva in a permanent way. That's called Vishvagrasa, which is the idea of milk getting poured back into milk. That you can't separate them. The analogy I use, because we're in Hawaii, is the bucket of ocean water. You take the bucket, you scoop out the water. What have you done? You have, the water represents consciousness, so you have individuated it. You have created the sense of an individual by the water in the bucket. Water in the bucket thinks it's a separate individual than the ocean. It has to learn that it's not. And then eventually the water in the bucket gets poured back into the ocean. So that's Vishvagrasa, when you finally return. And that was in the quote we, the Upanishad quote we read the other day, gave that example. Okay, so let's read and see if it says anything that we haven't covered. Oh, the quote is right here. That's good. The ultimate goal of life on earth is to realize the self. The rare attainment of nirvikalpa samadhi, each soul discovers its Shivanas, absolute reality, Parashiva, the timeless, formless, spaceless self-God, Om Namah Shivaya. The realization of the self, Parashiva, is the destiny of each soul, attainable through renunciation, sustained meditation, and frying the seeds of karmas yet to germinate. It is the gateway to moksha, liberation from rebirth. The self lies beyond the thinking mind, beyond the feeling nature, beyond action or any movement of even the highest state of consciousness. The self-God is more solid than a neutron star, more elusive than empty space, more intimate than thought and feeling. It is ultimate reality itself, the innermost truth all seekers seek. It is well worth striving for. It is well worth struggling to bring the mind under the dominion of the will. After the self is realized, the mind is seen for the unreality that it truly is. Because self-realization must be experienced in a physical body, the soul cycles back again and again into flesh to dance with Shiva, live with Shiva, and ultimately merge with Shiva in undifferentiated oneness. Yea, Jiva is actually Shiva. The Vedas explain, as water poured into water, milk poured into milk, ghee into ghee, become one without differentiation, even so the individual soul and the Supreme Self become one. So that's the Vishvagrasa, that idea of eventually becoming one. Any questions on that? Self-realization, moksha, and Vishvagrasa, three separate concepts. Yes?
Is the self different from the soul, or is it the soul and the self?
Ah, that's coming up. We'll save that one. It's coming up. I think it's tomorrow. You have to have a lot of patience.